Can you speak here, please? Because I've just got to...
I've got a meeting at 7:30. Sorry.
It's 7:15 a.m. in suburban Melbourne, and this is the scene at my house most mornings.
Are you going to sit down at your table? Babe, I've got to tell you, I do not have time for this morning.
I'm Madeline Morris. I live in Australia, but no matter which country you're from, if you've got kids and both parents work, this noisy, stressful morning tableau will likely sound familiar. It certainly does for my friend Libby.
I actually put a post on Facebook a few weeks ago. I'd been up since 5:30. I'd made cupcakes with my three-year-old. I'd done two loads of washing. I'd dropped the kids off. I'd done a whole lot of stuff. I'd had two outfit changes. And then you get to work and you run a meeting and you sit in a meeting and look around and go, do people actually realise what I've been through to get here? Like, does anyone actually want to say, well done, you made it?
For working mothers around the world, this struggle to get out the door, drop the kids at nursery and hurry on to work is a rushed, guilt-inducing but necessary part of every day.
Okay, babe, let's go.
But is this the only way?
We're late.
In this program for the BBC World Service, my two-year-old daughter Scarlett and I are on a quest to find out how other cultures care for their children when mums go back to work. We'll pack our bags for Fiji, where a child really is raised by a whole village, and we'll head to China to visit a boarding school for three-year-olds. But first, let me show you how it works in my family, as Scarlett and I set out on a journey to find who's left holding the baby.
It's about 8 a.m. and Scarlett and I have just arrived at Treehouse, her nursery. This is normally when I drop her off on my way to work. There's a steady stream of mum and dads dropping their kids off too. There's about 100 children at Treehouse on any given day, and they range in age from about 6 weeks to 5 years.
My name's Veronica Ferguson. I'm the director of Treehouse Early Learning here in Elsterwick. We run what's called an emerging curriculum. So a basic description of an emerging curriculum is a play-based program. There is a lot of focus on programs and providing high-quality education for children. We've obviously done a lot of research in the fact that 0 to 5 is a really important time for children. So although it is a homely and caring environment, we also definitely focus on the program and making sure that we are developing the children as much as we can.
Here in Australia, daycare or nursery is a popular choice. Around half of all mothers of two-year-olds work, and of those kids, around half are in some form of formal childcare, and both those figures are growing every year. For families like mine, where grandparents live far away and nannies are unaffordable, daycare is the only option. But many Australian parents also think sending kids to paid childcare is good for them.
I'm Amanda Nolan. I have three children here at Treehouse. I have Hannah, who's just turned one, Alex, who's nearly three, and Jessie is 4.5. I'm a firm believer in the first 5 years of a child's life really moulds their beliefs and their personalities, and I think it's important for them to get exposure to people well beyond their own parents and their own environment, and to start to socialise, and no harm in picking up a few extra little coughs and colds and things. Mm-hmm. Admittedly, the very first day I dropped my first child at childcare, I was slightly nervous, and I think that was the only day I've ever had any doubts.
What about the expense of it? Because it's not, childcare isn't cheap.
No, childcare is not cheap. Oh, it ends up being a good 7.5, 10, probably $30,000 on childcare.
Probably about $30,000 Australian on childcare every year?
Yes, at least.
So you need to be earning at least $50,000, really, in order to pay for that, which is what some women would be the full-time wage for some women.
Yes, absolutely. My wage pretty much goes to childcare and nanny and a little bit towards rent.
Unlike Amanda, I can't say that I never have any doubts when I drop Scarlett off.
I've got to go, babe.
Even after a year of her being at nursery, some days the guilt and sadness still break my heart.
I'll see you this afternoon.
So I think it's very common for mothers to feel guilty about their childcare decisions, regardless of what kind of decision it is, whether it's with a nanny or with a family daycare home or with a childcare centre.
That's Professor Linda Harrison, one of Australia's leading experts on early childhood education. Like many parents, I've read well-known studies which suggest children who spend long hours in daycare can be more aggressive and take more risks. So I've got a few questions for the professor.
Is there a hierarchy of care? So parental care is best, nanny care is second best, group care is next?
Research hasn't really looked at that. What we certainly know is that the influence of the family, so parental influences on children, is the strongest influence on children's lives.
I think part of the reason that I worry about leaving Scarlett at daycare and other mums do is that it has a lot of bad press. And there have been studies which have shown that there are actually some negative outcomes for kids left in daycare.
In many cases, what we're now starting to see as more research is coming through from other countries is that you have to take account of the quality of care, which seems in some cases to counteract the negative impact of longer hours.
My impression from what I see at my daughter's daycare is that it's very professionalised and sort of quite education-based.
Mm-hmm. There's a real focus on children's learning, but it's done in a way that's not sort of teaching a program of teaching children specific academic skills. It's done through a play-based learning. What we're seeing in some of these studies that are looking at cognitive outcomes, they're talking about a cognitive boost of centre-based care. If you think about the facilities that most centres can provide, you know, it's far, far greater than even the best home can provide, you know, the outdoor equipment, the huge range of puzzles, the changing array of toys and things like that, you know. So it makes sense that a cognitive boost is coming from the good quality centre-based programs.
Professor Harrison makes me feel conflicted. On one hand, I'm pleased I might be doing something good for Scarlett's brain by sending her to daycare. On the other, I feel guilty for not looking after her myself, and I worry that we're starting to think about education and preparing children for school when they're still really just babies. And that's a concern shared by Professor David Lancey, a world-renowned anthropologist who studies parenting across culture and generations.
What I see is a fashion, a movement to really, really ratchet up the expectations in terms of shaping that child, optimizing that child's development. I think we've moved well beyond just what do we need to do in order to raise children adequately to meet the demands of 21st century society. It's bound to be stressful. There's very little downtime. There's very little relaxing for folks nowadays.
It's exhausting, and that's one of the
exhausting.
Reasons that, I wonder if it's really worth it. But then I don't see how we would do it any other way here.
When I look back at my own childhood, both my parents worked. My sister and I, we went to school. We did well in school. We had really idyllic childhoods. And yet, I don't remember this kind of running around craziness and stress.
That was then, but what about now? Well, Professor Lancey assures me that there are still places in the world where parents work and children are looked after, but without the rush, pressure and guilt that so many Western parents feel. It's time for Scarlett and I to pack our bags in search of a different way. It's time for us to go to...
Where are we going?
Fiji!
Fiji!
There will never be a shortage of good women who will come and help you look after your children.
They say it's easy to bend a tree when it's just small, and it's hard to bend a tree if it's big. You get me?
Well, here we are. We've just stepped off the plane and into sunny, sticky Fiji in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. And we're here because I've heard that this small island nation still practices the centuries-old tradition of communal childcare and child rearing. And it's a completely foreign concept to me and probably to lots of other women in the West. So I'm really interested to see how it works. And I'll be really interested to see how Scarlett gets on with the Fijian kids as well. Come on, babe. Good morning. Hi, Selena. This is my Scarlett.
Selena Kurulethe is our guide for our first foray into Fijian village life. She's a psychologist, and like most Fijians, she's mad about kids.
Hello!
They told me two of the story
She is nearly two.
You ready?
Ready to go.
Around half of Fiji's population of nearly a million live in villages where traditional culture is still strong. Selena's taking us to one not far from the capital, Suva.
The name of the village is Waturua. It's not a really large village, it's quite small, huh? Maybe about 100 homes altogether.
Okay.
And the main source of income would be market of fish selling and vegetable selling.
So that would this be a typical Fijian village?
Yeah. By many measures, it is a typical Fijian village. They still do the planting together, fishing together. They still have, like today, Mondays is their communal cleaning up day.
You're listening to Who's Left Holding the Baby on the BBC World Service. After we arrive in Waturua, I'm introduced to Lemba, a young mother. Like most of the women in the village, she doesn't have paid work. Her job is to go fishing for crabs and prawns in the bush. But today it's high tide at the river, so she's free to take me on a tour of the village.
This is a church. We got two churches. One is a Methodist and one is a Catholic from that side.
Okay. Bula.
Bula.
This is the house I was talking about. This is my partner when we go to the bush. So we leave the kids at home. The grandmother's looking after the kids. And the sister too has got a small baby, so she can look after the kids at home too.
So you just put all of the kids in together?
Yeah, here we stay in the village like this. The children can go house to house, going looking for fun like this. They stay in that side and they come this side so they can play.
As we talk, the freedom for kids to roam around is obvious. About 10 of them scamper in and out of the little wooden shack, giving Scarlett her own introduction to village life. And she happily follows them outside, barefoot, to play while we chat.
I'm Scarlett, sit down here. Oh, you want to play with the kids?
Yeah? It's really interesting to see Scarlett play with the kids here, because back home, she's much more shy. So I don't know what's going on, but she's definitely much more, much more friendly.
Joining us in the hut is Peter, Lemba's cousin, who's just put down the grass cutter he was brandishing as part of the communal cleaning up day.
So do you do everything very communally here in the village?
Yes, we help each other around. Yeah? Well, say for instance, if we don't have any salt, just come here, ask for some salt.
Really, because that's so different from how I live my life. My life, I live in my house, and I know my neighbours. I say hello to my neighbours, but I would never ask for salt from my neighbours.
You sure? Yeah.
Yeah. I go to the shop and buy some salt.
Even in here, we don't have any freezer, so if I need to get where to put my chicken for Sunday, I just go to one of the houses and ask them to put the chicken there. Sometimes I can sleep here for a night.
Do you have any nieces and nephews?
Yes, they are all my nieces, they are all my nephew.
Do you help look after your nieces and nephews? Do you discipline them if they need it?
Yes, during my time we get hiding, but now it's because there's a lot of children, right? So we just talk to them. Yeah. We all take responsibility for all the kids in the village.
As we've been hearing, Fiji is changing and not everyone lives in these traditional subsistence villages anymore. A large part of Fiji's economy now relies on tourism, and around all of the big hotels you'll find what once were small villages now bursting at the seams with people who work in those big hotels, waiters, cleaners. At our hotel we've met a mother and daughter, Oni and Mualina, and they've invited us back to their village, the village of Narewa, which is just on the outskirts of our hotel, to see how they live and how they look after their children.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Come here.
Hat. Yeah. Hat. Here's your hat.
What's it? There are kids everywhere here. Oni and her family live in a four-shack compound with their own little farm. She's raised four of her nieces and nephews, as well as her own kids, even though she works full-time.
You want to go and play with the kids? Come on.
Come on.
While Scarlett's playing outside, she takes me to meet her sister, who lives in a one-bedroom shack where she's single-handedly raising nine grandchildren while their parents work away.
Hello, everybody.
Bola!
Hi, Nonia.
Hi, Nunia. I'm Madeline. So, Nunia, so tell me who you've got here living with you in the house.
Myself and my son, one son, two sons, and nine grandchildren.
You're a superwoman.
Yes.
Very much.
My youngest I'm looking after is coming to 6 months now.
So where do you all sleep?
Four single sleeping mattress, two double sleeping mattress there. Nighttime, we spread it there. Daytime, we put it outside in the sun.
Why are you looking after so many children?
Because the parents working, that's all.
Are you happy to look after them?
I'm very happy to look after them.
Sitting on the floor next to Nunia is her daughter Naomi, who's home on annual leave from her hotel job on another island. She leaves her three-year-old son with her mum for 2 months at a time, then comes to visit for just 3 days.
Leaving him for the first time was very sad for us to leave them. But after 3-6 months then, we managed to leave them with our parents.
Did you ever think about doing anything else, leaving him anywhere else, other methods of childcare?
No, just through our mum. If we leave them to other baby care, to the daycare or the nannies, looking for other nannies, then they won't have the love like our mum will give them.
So I'll explain my own situation. I pay for Scarlett to go to daycare, a lot of money, but I have no other choice. I have to pay if I want to work, and I like working, so I want to do that.
We feel sad about that because we can look after kids or children without money. We don't have to pay. We just look after them with our love and heart. As you pay a big amount of money, I feel it's not good.
Nunia says she doesn't need money to care for her grandkids, and that's lucky because she doesn't have any. This family, like many in Fiji, is dirt poor. While Scarlett wolfs down the sandwiches and fruit I've brought for her lunch, Nunia's brood make do with some water crackers and black tea.
They love the biscuit.
But Nunia seems to be happy and unfazed. In fact, for most of my visit, she stayed inside her shack watching Bollywood films on TV while her gang of grandkids played outside. And that's where I find Mualina, Nunia's teenage niece, who I met when she babysat for Scarlett at our hotel. She's keeping an eye on her younger cousins. There's some kind of anarchy here. The kids are putting the toy car on a big pile of leaves and shouting loudly.
That's what they normally do.
This is definitely a boys' game. Scarlett's holding back, looking a little bit nervous. One of the boys has just bashed his cousin up with a stick across his back. And the other boys are shouting at him.
They're telling him to shut up. They're telling him not to cry because he's a boy.
So if a boy cries, he gets told to shut up? There's no cuddles?
Mm-mm. Even the parents doesn't do anything.
So the kids are pretty much left to solve their problems themselves?
Yeah.
So in our culture, if kids fight...
Yeah, you have to resolve yours. Yeah. I know it's different from your culture. They always solve their own problems. Hey, now.
It was amazing to see Mualina hang back, even though the boy got a really serious whack with a pretty big stick. But equally amazing to see him not run for adult help. But I'm learning this is the traditional Fijian way. They passionately love their kids, but they leave them alone, even when they fight. There's very little reading, and none of the concerns about developing young minds that worries so many parents of toddlers in the West. But Fijian kids seem happy, resilient, and resourceful, which is more than I can say for a lot of Australian kids their age. Oni, the matriarch of the family we're visiting, puts it a different way.
To be honest, the Western kids, they are spoiled. They have plenty of things. You know, every birthday, you have to buy things for them. Like the Western kids, they expect. Our kids, they don't.
We do lots of activities with our kids. So, you know, we go to the playground, or if they're at childcare, they'll do painting, or they'll, you know, lots of activities. But that's, you don't really do that so much here.
We don't spend time with them like you guys. That's a difference too. like you must take them and play with them in the daycare, and you take them to the park and play, you know, with them. But over here, they are on their own.
So can we say that one way of caring for children is better than another? A final question for anthropologist David Lancey, who we heard from earlier.
Oh, clearly not. I think one of the lessons we have to take away is there's very little about child rearing and child care that can be somehow extracted from the cultural context and where you can say, well, this way is better than that way.
What about this issue of education? Because that was one of the big contrasts between Australia and Fiji. I mean,
yes.
We value that very much in our culture, but there they didn't really seem to value that.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think this is a good example, a good illustration of why we should never romanticize or be too overly sentimental about the practices of pre-modern peoples, especially when it comes to children, because, the Fijian model isn't very effective in terms of preparing children for the rigors of modern schooling.
So what then are the big lessons that we can learn across cultures about when it comes to looking after children? Do we just get the childcare culture that we deserve, or is there something that we could learn from other societies?
The message that I think we can convey to parents of young children is stop stressing so much. The evidence from anthropology, from the study of children in other cultures, is that they're amazingly resilient emotionally. And the villagers know that because they let the kids kind of get beat up a little bit emotionally and what have you, and they know that they'll turn out just fine. So I think we can lighten up.
It's a comforting message, and one that I'll try to remember as Scarlett and I head back to work and nursery in Australia. In Fiji, we've seen a much more hands-off and communal approach to childcare. But is it better? Honestly, I'm not sure. I love the idea of Scarlett being more free and me being less stressed over her care and development. But as I listen to Scarlett read to herself in her nursery's little library, I can see she's happy and stimulated, and those can only be good things. Coming up after the news, Scarlett and I are off to China to see an approach to caring for toddlers that couldn't be more different from how things are done in Fiji. We'll visit a boarding kindergarten. Why would parents send their only child away at the age of 3, and what effect does it have on the kids? Stay with us as we continue our journey around the world to find who's left holding the baby on the BBC World Service.
The BBC World Service.
2,000 years ago, the Greek philosophers called the Pythagoreans unraveled the secret of music.
Every culture in the world has singing of one sort or another.
The harmony tradition, it comes from the blood.
We can't talk at the same time as each other, but we can sing at the same time as each other.
When you go to heaven, what you hear is harmony, because it's the language of the angels.
And they were so entranced by these equations that they said that the universe must be based on vibrating strings.
The BBC World Service presents a celebration of harmony singing from around the globe. In perfect harmony, online at bbcworldservice.com.
Coming up on the BBC.
I think it will be good for her to stay at school, and then we will have quality time together at the weekend.
In the second part of Who's Left Holding the Baby, we go to China, where some working parents send their 3-year-olds to boarding school. Why do they send their only child away, and what effect does it have on the kids? That's Who's Left Holding the Baby after the news on the BBC World Service.
BBC News with John Jason. United Nations officials say thousands of people have been killed in South Sudan since fighting broke out last week between rebel soldiers and government forces. There's been further fighting in the town of Bor. South Sudan's President Salva Kiir said the army has taken back control of the town from forces loyal to his former deputy, Riek Machar. The UN Security Council has voted to send an additional 5,500 peacekeepers to South Sudan. The decision will bring the total number of troops in the UN mission to 12,500. Reports from Egypt say the former Prime Minister Hisham Kandil has been arrested. Mr. Kandil served under the ousted Islamist President Mohamed Morsi. He's wanted by authorities to serve a previously issued one-year prison sentence. The UN has called on Egypt to release three prominent activists from prison. They were jailed on Sunday for organising protests in 2011, before the fall of President Hosni Mubarak. Pope Francis has celebrated his first Christmas Eve Mass as Pontiff. Thousands of worshippers crowded into St. Peter's Basilica in the Vatican to listen to Francis preach that every Christian can choose between darkness and light, between love and hate. Crowds also gathered at the Church of the Nativity in Bethlehem. Correspondents say it was the largest turnout in the city for years. A federal appeals court in the United States has rejected the Utah state government's request to halt gay marriages there. The government had wanted no further same-sex marriages to be conducted, while it appeals against a judge's ruling overturning the state's ban on gay weddings. Nearly 700 couples have been married since Friday's ruling. A man dressed in a red and white Santa Claus costume has been shot in the back whilst handing out toys. A local television crew in Washington, D.C. was filming the unnamed man as a pellet hit him. He was not seriously hurt. A man dressed in the green garb of the cartoon character The Grinch took over delivery duties at the event. BBC News.
It's 9:30 a.m. and 4-year-old Kelly Jiang is saying goodbye to her parents as they drop her off at kindergarten in Shanghai. Bye, Mum and Dad, she insists, waving them away happily. Bye, Kelly, they say as they leave. They won't see or speak to their daughter for another 4 days. Until then, along with her classmates, Kelly will eat, play and sleep here at her kindergarten. I'm Madeline Morris, and in this second half of Who's Left Holding the Baby for the BBC World Service, my 2-year-old daughter Scarlett and I have come to China to learn about a uniquely Chinese approach to childcare, the boarding kindergarten. Before the news, Scarlett and I looked at daycare in Australia, where we live. It's expensive but very professional, and we discovered a strong emphasis on early education. Then we travelled to Fiji, where children are still cared for by the extended family. Kids there are resilient and resourceful, despite parents not really worrying about their development. As a working mother, I'm constantly stressed by the pressure of getting my daughter to and from daycare, fitting my work in between. The daycare rush isn't a problem for Chinese parents who send their children to boarding kindergarten. But what's life like for their kids? It's karate class for Kelly and her classmates, and they're all practicing their high kicks in the gymnasium. They've got a karate teacher in full kit, the white outfit with the brown belt on there. It's really different from, say, an Australian daycare. Children of this age wouldn't be doing this sort of organised exercise, but the kids here are absolutely loving it.
My Chinese name is Li Yuefei. My English name is Phyllis Lee. Right now, I'm the coordinator for Western and Chinese teaching. In our school, there are lots of those kind of special activity, and the kids, they will choose by themselves. Karate, football, reading books, taekwondo. The parents want them to learn those kind of activity better than just writing some words or doing some paperwork, those kind of things. This is more interesting for the kids.
This kindergarten is in Kangchau, an upper middle class neighbourhood in Shanghai. It's run by the well-respected China Welfare Institute, and it was actually China's first ever boarding kindergarten. It was set up over 60 years ago to care for war orphans, as well as the children of China's new Communist Party elite. But these days, it's a very different crowd who send their children here, and you can tell by the queues of Mercedes and Audis that are lining up in front of me here at drop-off time. It's now China's wealthy middle-class professionals
who pay the $1,000 or so a month in school fees. Why do they do it? Well, some parents are simply too busy with work to look after their children, but others have a different reason.
Parents think the main advantage is that it helps to make their children more independent and have better life skills. In fact, we did some comparative studies. It is indeed true that the kids from boarding classes do have slightly better life skills than the kids from daycare classes and are more independent and better at socialising with others.
That's Xu Jing, the executive principal of the China Welfare Institute's Kung Chao Kindergarten.
There's another reason parents send their toddlers to board at the kindergarten. Following traditional Chinese culture, many parents also have their own parents living with them. Because of the one-child policy, there's only one grandchild in the house. The couple sometimes worries that the grandparents will spoil the kids. So that's another reason that they send their kids here.
Basically, you're teaching kids to be part of society, but I guess the question is, when is an appropriate age for a child to be part of a good society? Some people would say that 3 or 4 is still too young and that they need to just be children and they can learn to be a good member of society a little bit older.
Actually, we always do a very in-depth interview with the parents who want to send their child to boarding class to find out why. Generally, we advise them if you have the time and ability to be with your kids, it's better to choose daycare classes. But some parents really don't have the time or energy to look after their kids. And for those parents, we are willing to provide this alternative option.
Okay, but there are parents who send the children here because they think it's good for them.
There are indeed some parents who themselves graduated from this kindergarten, and they are very successful now, and they hope that their children can repeat their track of growth.
Back in Kelly's class, it's playtime, and a little boy is showing me his cooking skills on the toy stove. The bright classroom has lots of specially decorated corners where the 4-year-old boarders can play at being hairdressers, librarians, doctors, and mums and dads. My daughter Scarlett, who's nearly 2, is with me, and I'm trying to get her involved. So's Kelly. Here's a toy for you to play with. It's a baby, Kelly says. But Scarlett's hanging back, which is very unlike her. In Fiji, she happily ran around playing with the little kids in the village. Perhaps it's the noise or the sheer number of children, but here she's holding fast to my leg and not letting go as our tour with Miss Lee continues. So what would be a typical day for these children? So what sort of activities do they have?
Actually, this is a boarding class. So after their breakfast, they should go outside for a little bit outdoor playtime. And normally we have the PE lesson with the PE teacher, and we have the music lesson with the music teacher, and like those kind of role play.
These children aren't unhappy at all. This is a very happy, very creative, very fun environment. There's no rote learning here. They're playing and enjoying themselves. Kelly's got a little baby and she's putting her to bed.
Be the mom.
She's being the mom.
Yeah, being the mom. Yeah. 今天爸爸是谁呀? Oh, 这位是爸爸。哦，你要好好的跟他啊。那你现在手上抱的是什么呀?
小娃娃.
That's my baby. She hold. That's my baby. And this is the father. This is
the mother. She's got a father as
yeah,
well.
Yeah. So this looks like one family. And
he's on the phone yeah, talking. Yeah, very important
busy.
Business.
Yeah, his business. Yeah, busy with his business. Yeah.
I found it hard not to feel sad watching Kelly play house and tenderly put her little doll to bed. For the past year, she's been put to bed on weeknights not by her parents, but by a teacher, ever since she was first sent to boarding kindergarten, aged 3. Like Kelly's play husband, her own father is very busy with his business. Jamie Jiang is an investment consultant, one of China's new generation of wealthy entrepreneurs. His wife doesn't work. They're a friendly, smiley pair who clearly adore their daughter.
and they kindly agreed to be interviewed for this program for the BBC World Service about what's becoming a touchy subject in China, why they sent their only child away to school so young.
We actually had a family meeting to discuss it, and we visited many kindergartens to compare and choose. Eventually, after a lot of research, we found this kindergarten of the China Welfare Institute, which has both boarding and daycare classes. Through our research, we discovered that boarding classes benefit outgoing children. It helps to make them more independent and have better life skills. And our Kelly, she was a very cheerful baby and liked having her own space. So we took her for a trial to feel the school's atmosphere. We asked her if she was happy to go to boarding classes, and she said yes, she'd like to.
And what about you? Do you miss her?
At the beginning, we missed her so much. I remember the first day when we sent her off. We heard her crying. We saw she didn't want us to leave. But my wife and I have made an agreement. We just need to go without turning back. So we did. But the whole journey from the school back to home was so very long. We really missed her. But in the evening, we got a message from the teacher saying she was adapting well, and then we felt relieved. In some ways, we let her go earlier than others let their children go. But that means we cherish the relationship even more, from the very bottom of our heart. And we know that with the world becoming more global, do we let go of her earlier to help her become more independent and be able to survive in this society?
I'm a parent and I understand that children need to become independent. It's a global world and we need to let go of our children sometime. I think it's just very hard for parents of pretty much every other culture to understand how you could do it so young when they're still so vulnerable and they still seem to need their parents so much.
On this issue, I have two good friends. And whenever they pass by this kindergarten, they always criticize me. They think that I'm a brutal dad for sending my kids to a board at such a young age. But it only took her 2 weeks to get used to kindergarten life. And she's brought back home much more joy to us than the kids in daycare classes. For example, she shows us how she puts on her clothes, her shoes. The kids at daycare classes, they can't do that. So it's a mixture of joy and pain. And we cannot say who's right or who's wrong, or what's good and what's bad. It really depends on the individual. I just simply think Kelly is more suitable for this boarding kindergarten.
But adapting is not easy. It's bedtime now for the little class, the three-year-olds, and about half of them are crying. The teachers are trying to give them cuddles and comfort them, but there are only two teachers to a class of 22 and there's just not enough arms to go around. It's really quite upsetting to watch. And Scarlett is clearly terrified. She's clinging to my leg, this look of fear on her face. She's obviously terrified I'm going to leave her. There's no way that I'm going to do that. I just want my mum, cries the little boy. Mum will pick you up tomorrow, his teacher replies. This is the harsh reality for China's boarding toddlers. There may be plenty of fun during the day, but from Monday to Friday, bedtime isn't cuddles from mum and dad. It's lights out in a dormitory with 20 other children. After a little more comforting from the teacher, most of the children are quiet and it's time for a bedtime story. Our chaperone for the evening, Huan Ying, explains what we've just seen.
The teachers are telling them that tomorrow is Friday and Daddy and Mummy will come to pick you up very soon, so you don't want to go home with swollen eyes. We say be reasonable, that you need to be really happy to meet your parents so they won't worry about you. And if you behave well here at kindergarten, your parents will be proud of you because you are growing up.
So there are quite a few kids who are upset tonight. Is that normal?
It is, because the children are different from each other. It's more difficult for some kids to adapt to this environment than others, because they've been so well looked after at home since birth, and it makes them feel insecure when they're separated from their parents. So the teachers make sure to give special care to these kids, with lots of cuddles and emotional support. We're especially seeing lots of tears tonight because these children have just started boarding at the kindergarten a few weeks ago. In about 2 months, no kids will cry at bedtime.
So most of the parents live in Shanghai, mm-hmm. this class. Mm-hmm. Does it ever happen that if things are going really badly, that you'll call the parents and say you need to come and collect the child in the middle of the night?
We generally don't do that. In fact, it never happens. The child usually just cries for half an hour and the teacher just comforts them until they go to sleep. The children also have family photos, so if they're sad, they can look at the photo and talk to it, and it's just like the parents are there with them.
They never talk on the phone to their parents during the week?
The kids are allowed to talk to their parents on the phone on special occasions, but we don't recommend it or encourage it normally because it makes it more difficult for the kids to adapt to the new environment. It just increases the duration of the weaning.
Both Scarlett and I left the kindergarten that night affected by what we'd seen. Scarlett was much more clingy than normal and refused to sleep in her cot, only falling asleep in my arms. And I was haunted by the memory of those little faces, their eyes quietly welling up with tears as bedtime came. But if there's one thing I've learned from Scarlett as we've travelled around the world looking at childcare for this program, it's that kids are tough and supremely adaptable, much more so than we generally give them credit for. So does this unsettling bedtime scene cause problems for China's boarding toddlers later in life? Or do they adapt like their parents want them to, eventually becoming more independent and self-reliant? It's a question I put to Han Mei Ling, a psychologist who's treated a number of teenagers and adults who went to boarding kindergarten.
It does affect them. They feel abandoned. They feel their irrelevance. They struggle to find what their place in life is, and they also don't know how to behave in their own family.
The parents who we've spoken to who send their children to boarding kindergarten, they do it because they think it's going to foster a sense of independence and strength. Is that also a possible outcome? Does boarding kindergarten work in some cases for children in giving them that independence and strength?
I don't think so. The parents think that the kindergarten is a more professionalised environment and the kids can get better training, but that's not the case at all. In order to learn to be independent, kids need the support and care of their parents. It's not right to put them in a new environment separate from their parents, where they lose that emotional rock. It's a brutal way to gain independence. They're kids, not grown-ups.
But there must be positive cases. I mean, you see the negative cases, but there must be, maybe there are positive people who you just don't encounter because they don't need help.
If the kids' parents are very bad, it's possible that their environment in the kindergarten is better than at home, but children should stay with their parents. Kindergarten is the place for fun during the daytime where they can make friends, but we should never encourage the boarding system. Ever.
Boarding kindergartens are falling out of favour in China. Some are closing altogether, and others, like the one we visited in Shanghai, are swapping boarding classes to daycare. I wanted to speak to some young adults who'd been sent to board as toddlers, but it's not easy. Mostly, those we contacted said they'd had a negative experience, but didn't want to be interviewed because they didn't want to be openly critical. One person who would share her experience via email is Wang Danwei. She's now 23 and a professional fashion model.
I was sent to boarding kindergarten in Beijing when I was 3. Then I went straight on to boarding school. I went because my parents divorced, and both of them were so busy with work they had no time to look after me. At first, I just wanted to go home. I miss mom and dad so much. I just wanted to leave. But I think that in the end, I accepted it in a passive way. I think that's what adaptation means for young kids, passive acceptance. But I never liked boarding kindergarten. When I went on to boarding school, I felt a deep sense of exclusion and spent most of my time alone, keeping quiet and resisting getting to know new people. In my experience, boarding kindergarten teachers are often straight out of teacher training college and don't have the patience to deal with so many young kids, especially so many kids who need extra love and attention. I never thought my parents didn't love me, though. I knew they were busy at work. But a boy I went to kindergarten with didn't turn out so well. I heard he was thrown in prison for blackmailing his father. But I'm grateful for all my mom's sacrifices for me, so I'm still a sunshine girl.
We did also find one person who'd had a positive experience. Mo Yi is 17 years old and still studying. Like Wang Danwei, she was sent to boarding kindergarten aged 3, and she also shared her story via email.
My parents were very busy and hoped I could become more independent and receive a better education at my boarding kindergarten, which was a very good one. They tell me that when I first went and I saw all the toys, I started playing with other kids straight away. At the beginning, I missed home, but the food was very good and the environment lovely with lots of trees. At the kindergarten, I only saw my parents on weekends, so I valued my time with them very much. I also became scared of damaging our family relationship, and I worried when they argued even a little bit. I think that now, compared to other people my age, I'm more independent and more responsible. And whether you see this as a positive or the negative, I also cherish my relationship with my parents more than my peers do. I think everything has two sides. You can't have it both ways. I'm in the middle.
Oh, what's this one? Oh, Suri! Suri's wearing blue too!
Back at the kindergarten in Shanghai, the 3-year-old boarders are having their final lesson for the week, English.
Okay, guys, we'll do the circle. Big, big, big. Small, small, small.
In just a few minutes, the kids' parents will come and pick them up and you can feel the excitement. This is also my last shot at trying to get Scarlett to interact with the kindergarten kids.
Do you want to come and sit down? Do you want to come and sit down with the kids, baby? Come on, let's come and sit down.
But still, no luck. Scarlett stays where she's been for most of the trip, wrapped around my leg. I took her on this journey for a couple of reasons. For one, I hate being away from her for a day, let alone a week. But I also wanted to see how she'd react to a different care environment. In Fiji, she loved playing with the village kids, but here, frankly, my experiment's been a disaster. She's overwhelmed and silent. As the children pack up for the week, I start chatting to Lee, the English teacher. She's been working in China for 10 years. What do you think of the boarding kindergarten idea? Because you see it.
I think it's awful. I really do. I think it's awful. When my daughter and I first started teaching out here 9 years ago, kids were having lessons at 9 o'clock at night. And I said, you can't do this to them. They're up at 7 in the morning and they're still having lessons. The boarding section of this school was much, much bigger then, and so it's changed a lot. And so they don't have as many boarders now. They come in on Monday, they go home Friday, and it's breaks my heart. You come in here on a Monday morning and you've got the mama, baba, mama, baba. And they start from 3. Could you imagine putting her in?
No.
No.
The parents here tell us that they think it's really good for their kids, and the facilities are obviously excellent, and the teachers obviously really love the kids and try and give them as much love as possible. But
it's not the same as being at home. But a lot of parents here don't know how to look after their children, and so this is a really good option for them. And they do get a lot of care, and they do get a lot of love, and they do get a lot of attention. And it's not a job, and it's not a chore. It's a joy to be able to do it. A privilege, actually. But it's just not what we do as Westerners. And I doubt that a lot of it will change. There have been a lot of changes in education here in the last 10 years, but some things won't change.
All of a sudden, the door is opened and parents rush in, arms wide. They haven't seen their 3-year-olds for 5 days.
Oh,
parents are all just arriving, and the joy on the children's faces is incredible. And on the parents' faces as well, they're overjoyed to see their kids. It's making me a bit emotional, actually, seeing them. There's obviously so much love. It's just a different way of doing things.
As we're standing by watching the reunions and I'm pulling myself together, a mother and her daughter approach Scarlett and I.
Hello!
Hello. Oh,
thank you, sweetheart. This is my baby.
How old is she?
This is Scarlett.
She's two.
Okay,
Scarlett, nice to meet you.
Baby is Naomi. My name is Jackie.
So it's a happy time of the week, Jackie.
Yes, yes.
Does Naomi like it at the kindergarten?
I think so, because she's quite independent. She's learned a lot of things, like playing with the groups and also playing with the teams. And this is something we cannot teach her at home.
Does she miss you?
I think so.
Do you miss her?
Not a lot, because I have made a decision, so I think it will be good for her to stay at school, and then we will have quality time together at the weekend.
You never worry that she thinks that you don't love her because you put her to school?
I think it's how you actually trying to build her internal reasoning why we're sending her for boarding, because we tell her only the best kids that can be welcome to stay at home or stay at school. And it's equally enjoyable experience at school when compared with at home. But you have different things, different experience. So it's how you actually give the reasoning for her.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Here we go.
Scarlett and I finished our journey just in time to make it home for a celebration.
Happy birthday to you.
We've travelled from Australia to Fiji and China in search of different ways to look after children when mothers go back to work. I don't think I've found any solutions to my daily guilt-inducing daycare rush, but I have learned that no matter whether parents send their children to live with a grandmother, as we saw in Fiji, or to a weekly boarding class like in Shanghai, they're generally doing it out of love and a desire to give their children the best care they can afford. It's easy to judge Chinese parents for sending their children away, but really, how different is it from my own culture? In China, the youngest a child can board is 3, but in Australia, children can go to daycare when they're just 6 weeks old. And in Fiji, we met toddlers sent away to live with relatives for years on end. What Scarlett's shown me through our long and sometimes difficult travels is that she's tougher, braver, and more adaptable than I ever knew. And that makes me think that as long as I give her as much love as I can, it's okay to leave someone else holding my baby. Who's Left Holding the Baby was made by Wire Free Productions for the BBC World Service.